But true HIIT, we've got plenty of research showing when you just do alternating hard to very hard for your relative level of fitness with light to moderate recoveries, you get the same health benefits with minimal risk.
Hi, I'm Pete McCall. Welcome to this episode of the All About Fitness podcast. That voice you just heard was Dr. Len Kravitz. No, not the singer Len Kravitz, but the researcher Dr. Len Kravitz. If you've been in the fitness industry, if you work in the fitness industry, if you're a trainer or instructor, you should know that name. If you don't, well, you're going to learn a lot in this episode. Dr. Kravitz has been researching exercise for years. Not only is he one of the leading researchers, but he does a lot of writing and speaking and education for trainers and instructors. Almost every fitness conference, Dr. Len is there talking about the physiology of what we do, of how the body adapts to exercise. That's what's so amazing, is that there are so many different ways to exercise. We can do strength training, we can do cardiorespiratory training, we can do mobility training. And in those categories, we have a myriad of different ways that we can do different types of exercise. The hard part for us, and by us, I mean trainers and instructors who help you, the general consumer, sweat. The hard part for us is identifying which types of exercise can be best for your needs. Well, Dr. Kravitz is one of those people doing the research and doing the education to help us understand that. This is going to be a fun conversation today. We go deep into the benefits of high-intensity interval training, and we talk about some of the myths and misperceptions. Look, HIIT training works. High-intensity interval training works. But when done the wrong way, when applied the wrong way, it could really hurt you. It could. So what we talk about today is a proper application of high-intensity interval training. It's what Dr. Kravitz just wrote a book about called Hit Your Limit. So we talk about high-intensity interval training, we talk about Dr. Kravitz's research, and we talk about the type of exercise that provides the benefits that you want. Hearing us talk about this information on a podcast is one thing, but I would invite you to join me, Dr. Kravitz, and other fitness industry leaders at this year's Idea World Convention, which is happening in Anaheim, California from June 26th to 30th. It can be the most rewarding investment that you'll ever make. At the Idea World Convention, you'll have the opportunity to interact with myself, Dr. Kravitz, and a number of other people you've heard on All About Fitness so you can learn how to apply exercise to your life. At Idea World, you'll get the firsthand best practices on powerful and effective both one-on-one and group training programs. You're going to learn groundbreaking movement, nutrition, and behavior change strategies that you can use to help your clients get results. You're going to learn how to lead, manage, sell, market, and grow a bulletproof fitness business. Overall, you are going to become better as a trainer or instructor. And for general consumers, if you just want to come and learn as much about fitness as possible, please join us. All the information will be below in the show notes. And if you want a special discount, listen for after the interview, and I give you a special discount that will allow you to save on this year's Idea World Convention. If you're looking for that perfect piece of at-home exercise equipment, if you need weights for the home, but you don't want the heavy iron sitting around your house, then go to hyperware.com. Hyperware makes sandbells and softbells. Those are great for home use. Sandbells are exactly what they sound like. They're kind of a combination between a sandbag, a medicine ball. You can lift them, you can carry them, you can throw them. You might not want to throw them in your house. But anyway, you can do a lot of things with them. Softbells are take two sandbells and you can use them for a barbell. You can use them as a dumbbell, or you can put them on a kettlebell handle. But softbells allow you to turn sandbells into your favorite type of weights. Go to hyperware.com, use code AAF10. That's AAF10 to save 10% on the purchase of any Hyperware product. You can use it as a bench. You can use it as a step. You can use it as a balance trainer. You can use it for your high-intensity interval training. What is it? It's the TerraCore. Go to terracorefitness.com. That's T-E-R-R-A, core, C-O-R-E, fitness.com. TerraCore is one of the newest tools on the market. The TerraCore is recognized as one of the top 25 products you should have for your home. Go to terracorefitness.com and see why. You can use code AAF10, that's AAF10, to save 10% on the purchase of a TerraCore for your own use. And if you want to see some great stuff that you can do on the TerraCore, go to Instagram and check out TerraCore Fitness on Instagram. That's T-E-R-R-A, Core Fitness on Instagram. This is Pete McCall of the All About Fitness podcast, and I am sitting down today with Dr. Len Kravitz out of the University of New Mexico. Right, University of New Mexico?
Yes, indeed.
And Dr. Len is just wrote a book about high-intensity interval training. So one of the first questions I have, Dr. Kravitz, is what is HIIT? What is high-intensity interval training?
The wonderful HIIT, which has been around for 100 years, is workouts that involve a higher intensity of exercise, what we oftentimes call a spurt bout, alternating with a recovery bout that is a light to moderate type of intensity, and you alternate the spurts with recoveries, and the research is showing some incredible health benefits. And Pete, 100 years ago, sports scientists and coaches found that it really helped endurance athletes improve their PRs in the particular events that they competed in.
Huh. And so it's been around that long. And some of the stuff I've read about HIIT training is it was really big, I guess, in the Nordic community and like, you know, Finland, Sweden. They're the original researchers out of that. What were they doing differently? I mean, how did people used to train 100 years ago? Where did this evolve from? Because I love this. I don't know if you know this. I'm a huge fan of history. So anytime we talk about the history of the fitness, I totally geek out on that. So how did we get from starting HIIT more than a century ago to where we are today?
Oh, what a history. You know, if you really want to trace the roots that are documented in, you know, 100 years ago, endurance athletes were training for endurance by doing endurance runs. But then came along the Scandinavian competitor, Paavo Nurmi, and his coach had an idea. On an endurance run, six times during any endurance run, and this could be, you know, 60-minute type of endurance runs, I want you to do these spurts, you know, these 400-meter spurts where you go all out. And his coach always varied when Paavo would do these six spurts in these, like, one-hour endurance runs. And the whole philosophy of HIIT with sport performance was at any time in a race, you may really have to pick it up to either stay up with the competition or to get ahead of the competition. And the idea of a spurt bout in sport performance and training for those times when you have to pick it up became an incredible training technique. And this is really the historical, you know, evolution of HIIT training, the idea of having to do these spurts to either keep up or beat the competition. And then all of a sudden we have, you know, over years, the evolution of high intensity interval training due to the wonderful Scandinavian researchers, as you mentioned, who actually started doing research and showing, wow, this really does improve VO2 max. This really does improve your lactate threshold. And then the science started to really say, this is a great, great training type of for endurance athletes. And now we do it for all of our enthusiasts, too.
Well, I think that's so interesting because you go back and we look at this, when we look at like the history of a certain type of mode, like HIIT. You know, 80-100 years ago, I think coaches observed that maybe the runners got a better result, but it's only been, what, the last 30-40 years where we've really been able to understand what's going on physiologically in the body. So understanding, like, how metabolically what HIIT is doing and the change it's having. So the question I have to get to that, is HIIT safe? Because HIIT comes from high-intensity interval training, comes from the performance community for highly trained athletes, but is HIIT safe for the average person?
You know, I think the key here, that's really the number one absolute important question, what you've just targeted on. In sport performance, they always challenge the athletes to go all out spurts. And we've seen several studies that have used that approach too. But in reality, we see now the general application of HIIT is to go at intensity greater than what we would say is maybe 80% of your aerobic capacity, which for most people, and that's on the spurt bout of the HIIT, for most people, that's a hard to very hard relative to your fitness level type of bout. So Pete, the big difference is some trainers in the industry try to use the sport performance approach of all out. But true HIIT, we've got plenty of research showing when you just do alternating hard to very hard for your relative level of fitness,
fitness with light to moderate recoveries, you get the same health benefits with minimal risk.
Well, I want to come back to that because the interesting thing, and I'm going to alter that. I know out of respect, I want to call you Dr. Kravis, but we've known each other for a while, so also Len. But one of the things I've noticed recently, Len, in the literature is you have two different huge components, right? You have the sports performance community, which is all about energy conservation. Because when you look at exercise for sports performance, you're trying to conserve ATP. So if you need it in the final 100, 200 meters of a race, you need it in the final 5 minutes of a competition. So I find it interesting that you have one whole branch of literature has been studying maximized energy conservation and energy efficiency. And then you have the other side for the consumer or for the general health application, which is all about energy expenditure, which is like, how do we maximize energy consumption? So it's kind of like, in my mind, there are two different. It's not so. I like the fact that you identified that when trainers use a performance model for a health paradigm, because that's a huge difference. I think for listeners, and it's a general consumer audience that I like to speak to, why would a general consumer in their 40s or 50s, why would they do HIIT? Why would somebody in their 40s or 50s do high-intensity interval training?
The key, as you have so done your homework well, is the fact that we need to think HIIT for the health benefits for trainers worldwide and not to try to adopt the sport performance, which is really for athletic events, competition. The key, I think, for everybody to realize is when you alternate these bouts of a high or hard with a low to moderate, the research shows it's incredibly helpful for developing what we call cardio protection, heart protection from cardiovascular disease. And so there's magnificent research on the cardiovascular heart and vascular system benefits of doing HIIT. But Pete, you nailed it when you said energy expenditure. What happens is scientists, and you're right, Pete, it's been within the last few years only, have discovered when you do HIIT, it actually signals a new type of pathway. We call it the AMPK pathway, which actually sends a signal to the most important protein in muscle for building fat-burning fireplaces. And that protein is called PGC1-alpha. It's the protein that makes the burning fireplaces in the muscle cell, those organelles called mitochondria, get bigger and more. And when you spoke about energy expenditure, the bigger and more mitochondria you have, the greater energy expenditure you have for weight loss.
And the other thing too, though, isn't mitochondria important? Because now there's so much energy, there's so much focus spent on active aging. What role does mitochondria play for overall cellular health and aging?
Every chronic disease that we know of, just go down the list, from high blood pressure to any kind of vascular disease to type 2 diabetes, insulin resistance, has one thing in common: the breakdown of mitochondria, mitochondrial pathogenesis, things that are going wrong. And one thing HIIT, and I have to say, steady state is so wonderful at, it helps to combat the mitochondrial pathogenesis diseases. When the mitochondria start breaking down, we don't have enough energy to take care of the body's cells, tissues, and organs. And if disease is present, it exasperates whatever the disease is. And HIIT training is just a new approach that helps combat this pathological condition. We call it mitochondrial biogenesis, the making of new and bigger mitochondria.
That's really neat. And I'm gonna pause for a second, because I think if we sometimes found that, like, if we hold it too close, it'll start spiking, it'll start peaking. Yeah, so I think these are very they're a little sensitive. We get excited, we start bringing it closer, and so I'm gonna pause for a second.
I always do that too.
I always pause for a second. I think that's what people don't realize, Len, I think, is that health is from the cellular level up. And so that's why I wanted to ask that question, because when we do these, this type of exercise, it affects change in our body from the smallest level all the way out. So what's the danger of doing too much high intensity exercise?
As we age, we notice one thing, and if you're exercising a lot, I exercise every day, you do not recover as fast as you age. And that's a lot of chronological changes in cells where they're, just repairing and replenishing proteins that are being utilized in our workouts. And because HIIT is a little bit more challenging relative to, you know, your fitness level, you need to be very guarded on the recovery. So in my book, HIIT Your Limit, I start maybe suggesting one HIIT workout, especially if you haven't done it, you know, a week with alternating steady state bouts, work up to two, and perhaps even work up eventually to three HIIT, but then make sure they're non-consecutive. Pete, without a doubt, and I know you've done presentations on this, it's all about recovery and optimizing recovery so that on the next bout, you can give sufficient energy to improve your aerobic capacity, to improve, you know, all of your cardioprotective benefits.
Well, that's it. Again, that comes back to that paradigm, right, between you have your health seekers and you have your performance folks. Because in performance, you know, my background's rugby. When we would do HIIT training, is because we would go very couple minutes of very intense activity, and then we might have a breakdown or something, you know, where we have a minute or two, we get the recovery. So from a performance standpoint, we need to be able to perform at a high level and recover quickly. And the challenge I see in health clubs, and with the audience I try to communicate with, is to get people to understand that the better your recovery, the harder you can work. That it's just like we have this mindset, we want to work harder, we want to work longer. If 4 minutes of HIIT is good for us, then 30 minutes must be better for us, right? But isn't it true that when it comes to the high intensity, the duration of high intensity, Dr. Kravitz, is not nearly as important as the actual intensity itself?
Without a doubt. One of the greatest researchers of our time is a researcher in Boucher in, you know, Australia. And in reference to, you know, the intensity versus the duration that you just presented, I was at a conference in Australia where he introduced, you know, his concept of short sprint interval training. And he mentioned to the audience that no matter who it is, you know, people with disease and those with actual sport, you know, directions, they like to keep their workouts no longer than 20 minutes. And this shocked a lot of us, you know, in the audience. And, you know, in the question and answer, someone says, well, why don't you go longer, you know, to get more benefit? He says, well, we always just focus on intensity. Once, you know, any of our athletes or clinical patients gets up to 20 minutes, we just focus on making it incrementally a little bit harder because we've found from sport to health, it's all about the intensity.
Yeah, and that's what I think. And there's a piece of research that I've been referring to this year that was published last fall in the NCAA's Journal of Strength and Conditioning Research that I love. Because what they did is they took one group that did 1 4-minute Tabata workout. It was like a body weight. They did burpees. They did mountain climbers. And I don't remember. They did 4 body weight exercises and a Tabata. And for listeners, Tabata is you do 8 cycles. It's 20 seconds of exercise followed by 10 seconds of rest for 8 cycles for a total of 4 minutes. And what they found in this research is they had the one group do the Tabata workout, and they had one group do, I think they ran at 30 minutes on the treadmill at 80% of their VO2. I think it was 80% of their max effort. I don't even know if they used VO2 or heart rate. It was VO2 or heart rate. So Len's telling me heart rate. So they had one group do 12 minutes of exercise a week. They did 3 4-minute Tabata intervals. And you had the other group do 90 minutes of exercise a week, you know, on three treadmill workouts over the course of 16 weeks. And that, I think, was a critical part of the research. Was it was a longer research period. And what they found was that the 12 minutes a week got better results than the 9 minutes a week. Is that relatively consistent with what you've seen in the literature?
I think so. And without a doubt, because the HIIT actually activates a couple of unique signaling pathways to the mitochondria, I feel at the cellular level, the research is suggesting that HIIT has a more potent response, you know, to our cellular level adaptations. But we must take this with caution because right now, as you mentioned, that was a wonderful 16-week study that you talked about. And perhaps the best question I always get at conferences is HIIT really just faster at these cellular adaptations and will steady state eventually attain the same type of benefits, you know, or is there something very, very unique about HIIT? And I always have to reference, since I'm evidence-based, we need those long-term studies with HIIT, which we don't have yet, to really validate that there is that unique aspect that all of us scientists are hypothesizing by HIIT and chronically or long-term the benefits really proved to be that worthy.
See, one of the things, and for listeners, one of the things that I want you to pay attention to, when I speak with people like, you know, Dr. Kravitz, and you've been a professor for years. You're well known. You know, you're a tenured professor, and you're well known. And the interesting thing is, I find that the more people know, the longer you've been doing the research, the less definitive you are with your answers. Meaning that you don't know. You know, you've seen a study that maybe it was an 8-week or 12-week or 30-week that, you know, you're going to base, you can give an answer based on that study for that population only because that's what they observed. And so I want to, for listeners, I want you to caution that the people who I speak to that have the most knowledge are the least definitive in their answers, whereas other people that I've seen in our industry that really don't have that much experience or that much, you know, formal education are more definitive in their answers. So why is it with the research, why is it that we just don't know, right? I mean, what is it about research that we learn, and why should we be cautious when we hear people refer to it?
That is incredibly truthful, your comments, as you just so wonderfully expressed. Typically with researchers, in every question that we ask in writing or, you know, in a, you know, verbal presentation or here in an interview is, what does the evidence say? In relationship to, you know, our HIT conversation today, we have so many short-term, you know, 4, 8, 12, 16-week studies showing all these remarkable benefits from a health and performance type of assessment. But the evidence is not there for the long term. And as a scientist, we need to be truthful and factful. We need to be able to cite a study, you know, and share with the audience what the research says. And right now, the biggest area of growth for HIIT training is long-term studies, 6 months to 12 months to 18 months, and to compare those results with steady-state training, and we'll really have an answer to, you know, the pressing question, is HIIT just really an immediate response that's faster, or are there really magnificent benefits over the long run?
And that gets into another question. When we based on the evidence and based on what we've observed, you know, how important is it to periodize or to alternate between periods of high and low intensity? And what would be, like, how do you address that in your book?
Without a doubt, I encourage a periodized approach without explaining the periodized approach. But the body does much, much better in alternating bouts of a higher intensity with bouts of a lower intensity. And we're talking about now through the course of a week, not just within, you know, a workout session. And it gets back to what you and I were talking about first. You have a more optimal recovery when you alternate these bouts. Because if you just train too hard, the cells actually become overtrained too. And, you know, over time, overtraining, as you know, Pete, is a cellular adaptation that is too hard of exercise, and the cell is actually starting to break down. And if the cell breaks down, muscle cells, tissues start to break down, and then it can lead to, you know, chronic problems. And in the book, without a doubt, I say one HIIT workout a week. Start with that. All the rest of the workouts are nice, steady state, because we do have the evidence on steady state. You could do that 7 days a week, steady state. We always say 3 to 5 is optimal. And then once you feel comfortable, add your second one on a non-consecutive day. But Pete, we're all leading to one thing that we as fitness professionals and coaches and trainers always remember: progressive overload.
Yeah.
Be very progressive, and the body will respond accordingly.
Well, I think that's because people forget that we have to challenge. And one of the things I like to remind instructors that our job is to help people be comfortable being uncomfortable, right? Is because, you know, if you're always doing the same thing, you don't hit some kind of discomfort, you're not challenging your body. I mean, isn't that true? Because it's one thing to do steady state where you get your heart rate up, and that might be, you can have some benefits from that. But don't you need to push to some sort of discomfort in order to kind of get the adaptations you want?
I really like your explanation. We always have to vary the workout in a way that has a positive stimuli to our muscles, to our cardiovascular system, to our musculoskeletal system, in order to improve. And years ago, I took an online class on metabolic biology from this very, very famous, you know, scientist. And he started off his presentation, one of them, with the concept that every day all of your cells get about 10,000 different stimuli. Mm. And then he said, you know, it was an online class. He said, apply this to your profession. If cells every day internally are getting 10,000 different stimuli, shouldn't you, no matter what your profession is, clinical, sport performance, health, shouldn't you be giving multiple stimuli to target your goal, whether it be health or performance? And I interpreted this as, you just can't do the same workout all the time, because then you're not varying the stimulus to the body.
Well, that's actually, because variability, that's been a new thing that we've been, you know, we've been talking about, is, you know, with other people, is the variability. How important is that variability to the body? Why should we be doing, changing our workouts on a regular basis?
The greatest research of our time came from Hans Selye in the early 1900s. And you know, his history is he works with mammals. He looks at rats for like 20 or 30 years. You know, we document how many years. And then he started doing research with, you know, humans. And, you know, he did multiple stimuli, not just exercise stimuli, but multiple different types of stimuli. And he found with all of us, all mammals, that if you continually change the stimuli, whatever you're doing, in our case, an exercise stimuli, the body will respond by getting stronger, faster, more powerful. But if you apply the same stimuli all the time, he not only showed that you would reach a level of plateau, but he showed that eventually the plateau, it would start going down because you're just not providing the variety for any type of adaptation to occur.
And that's one thing, and for listeners, that's called the general adaptation syndrome. You know, it's almost like our foundational, you know, exercise physiology 101. And so I love the fact that you brought up his work. You know, but when you look at that though, isn't there some, because this is the challenge, because we need variability, but don't we need some consistency for adaptation? So that's where we get like 6 to 8 or 10 week blocks of doing a specific type of group. So we can have some consistency, but we need variability in that consistency. So how should somebody, you know, how could somebody think about that in terms of their regular exercise program?
Well, without a doubt, you're talking about now about why periodization is so good, because periodization actually has, say like you and I, we're doing this workout regimen, hard day, light day, super hard day, and we do that type of workout, could be cardiovascular or resistance training, for 4 weeks. Then the concept of periodization, the next 4 weeks, we might do light day, hard, light, hard, hard. We will vary it. And the concept of periodization really addresses your point so well addressed, that there are periods of consistency, and then you change the stimuli, and perhaps 4, 6, or 8 weeks of other consistency. So that consistency is built into periodization, but we treat it systematically by changing that consistency. And it's, some people call it block periodization, where you make changes. You know, I like to use what's called 2 to 6 week blocks.
Yeah.
I love 2 to 6 week, and then I change it up.
And that's what I try to get people to think, because I think I love the 6 week thing, and I'm glad, because you're kind of validating that. I kind of go on the 6 to 8 week thing, because we find anything longer than 8 weeks in the gym, people fall off. Anything shorter than 6 weeks, I know we're not going to invoke that many adaptations. So when I look at classes, I usually plan my class programs out for about 8 weeks, for about 2 months. And I tell people in my classes, we're going to be doing something different over the next eight weeks. So be prepared for the first 2 or 3 weeks are going to be really tough. And then for the next 5 or 6 weeks, you're going to feel the difference. And they love that. They love kind of having that – they understand. I try to coach them through that about why the first 2 or 3 classes are going to be tough, because you're doing something different. But over the course of – if you stay consistent, by the last week of that, of this block, you guys – and I see the difference. I mean, the thing is, I see them move. I see everything change. And that's really where – that's the fun thing about being able to apply the science. So with your book, Hit Your Limit, why did you write that? What? Because you're well known. I mean, for the Dr. Kravitz writes a lot for Idea Fitness Journal. You speak all over the world at these conferences. I know we see each other quite a bit. But what prompted you to write Hit Your Limit?
What a fabulous question. It was really, you know, an email. You know, I've oftentimes, you know, wanted to do my next book. I have a book on eccentric training and a 100, 200 level textbook for fitness classes, Anybody's Guide to Total Fitness. And I got an email from the publisher of Apollo Publishers, the publisher of my book in New York City. And the publisher said, I've read all your articles, you know, they're all online, and said, I'd really like to do a book. If you were to do a new book, what would it be? And, you know, when I looked at the ACSM fitness trends, and at the time, the last 2 years when I looked at it, the number one trend was HIIT. So I told the publisher, you know, I love HIIT. I've done HIIT research, and it's, you know, the number one trend throughout the world. I think that would be the book to write right now.
And with that, I mean, why is it, I mean, what will people get? I mean, is it better for consumers? Is it better for professionals? I mean, how much detail is there, and what do people walk away from? Or what do people walk away with, I guess?
In writing the book, I have a wonderful publisher. She said, be as thorough as you want. So she gave me the ticket. And so HIIT is really two books in one, Pete. It's got an incredible, you know, introduction to exercise, the health benefits of exercise, and of course, everything you ever wanted to know about HIIT. But then the second part of the book is all weight management strategies, techniques, you know, all different types of evidence-based approaches to successful weight management. And I share with my publisher that even the trained personal trainer, the certified fitness professional, what love hit your limit for one major reason. The book is 100% cited. Everything presented. It's very user-friendly, but it's all based on research.
And that's so important. Now, the last thing I want to ask you about, because this, I think, is a really cool thing. I was going back through some, and for listeners, I've been in this business 20 years, and I have a collection of three-ring binders at home in my office of lecture notes and conference notes and articles. And I was going back to something in the early 2000s, and he's been a guest on this podcast a couple of times. He was a student of yours, Chris Frankel. And so of your students, it must be really cool to see students that come to you, that come through your program, have an impact. How does that make you feel when you see somebody that you've worked with that's now out there? You know, Chris Frankel works for TRX, and I'm sure you have plenty of other students who I might not be aware of. But how cool, you can sit back and say, you know, you've had an impact on the industry.
What a fabulous, fabulous question to be able to share, because very people ask this. But I am so proud of our students. Chris Frankel, believe it or not, Pete, he came back. He's doing his PhD.
And we talked about
that. So I guided him through his master's. He'll tell you the story. Now we're doing an incredible PhD study with Chris. And then, you know, just to share with you one other student, and this reflects of all of them, another one of my students, Dr. Lance Dalek, right now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I didn't realize he was one of your students. Okay.
Yeah, he works. A lot of the readers or listeners probably know the name Dalek because he does a tremendous amount of research. And of course, you know, he works with ACE sponsor. Sponsored, you know, type of research. And he was my, you know, one of our, I should say, students. But I take so much pride in seeing the students that I have mentored become titans in the world of research, in the world of fitness, in the world of exercise physiology. There's no better reward than seeing your students take the baton and take it to the next level.
And I thought that was so, I appreciate you saying that, but I thought it was so cool because it was like, I can't remember, it was like in the early 2000s that I saw that Chris had done an article with you. So I asked him about that, you know, when I interviewed him, and I just wanted to kind of close the loop and come back and connect the dots. So Dr. Len Kravitz, the book is Hit Your Limit. How can people get, where do people find it, and how can people follow any information you might put out?
Without a doubt, Amazon. They've got the best prices, and you know, they get it to you in 1 or 2 days, depending on your order.
With or without the robots or the drones.
With or without the drones and robots. So go to Amazon without a doubt. And then if you just Google Dr. Len Kravitz, that'll take you to my webpage, and then just click on publications. There's, believe it or not, there's over 300 publications. They're all peer-reviewed. So for the readers, you know, in this podcast that want to enjoy anything and everything about exercise, fitness, physiology of the body, just Google me, go to publications, and you're going to be reading for a while because there's, as you know, Pete, like 2.5 decades of research, you know, there.
Well, and for listeners, one of the first things I do, anytime I'm working on something new, anytime I will go to your page, and I'll have a link to it below in the show notes, and I'll link down to your book as well. But I go to your, I look at your articles, I go back to your articles, and I look at your footnotes. I think I emailed you one time years ago for your list of footnotes that wasn't published in something, because for listeners, if you're looking at research and you're looking at something, somebody like Dr. Kravitz or anybody else published, your best, sometimes the best information you get is what are their sources. So anytime I'm digging through, if I'm writing an article, if I'm preparing notes on something, I'm looking at the footnotes. And that's one of the things I love about the work you do is, and that's really one of the first stops I do when I'm going down a new avenue. If I'm, whatever I'm researching, I go to your page and I'm like, okay, what's the doc published on this? Let me dig into his footnotes. So I just want to say thank you for that. I don't know if I've ever told you that, but I mean, you're definitely one of the first stops at any time I start writing with that. So I want to say thank you for your time, and I appreciate being able to speak with you today on the podcast.
It's been an incredible pleasure sharing this conversation with you. And just to reiterate, the first thing I do with a scientific presentation is the same thing. Go to their footnotes and go to the original studies. So we both do the exact same approach in understanding whatever we're researching.
As I get into the wrap-up for this episode, I want to remind you that you can see Dr. Kravitz, myself, and many of your favorite fitness presenters this year at the Idea World Convention. As a listener of All About Fitness, you can take advantage of his special savings by using code PETE19. That's PETE19 will allow you to save $30 off the price of this year's admission for Idea World 2019. I'm going to have a link below to what the convention has. You can see all your favorite fitness personalities. You will learn so much about fitness, you'll walk away amazed. You do not need to be a trainer. You do not need to be an instructor. If you're just a general fitness enthusiast and you want to get your sweat on, come join us June 26th to 30th in Anaheim for this year's Idea World. That was a really fun conversation, and it's really good to know, for those of you that might be geeks like myself and Dr. Kravitz, it's good to know that we do some of the same practices when it comes to research. But that's really what I do, and I'm not blowing smoke when I told him that one of the first things I do when I'm working on an article or when I'm doing a project or when I'm putting together a talk is I will go to Len's page. I'll look up some of his articles, and I'll look in his footnotes, because if you want to really get good at what you do, understand the research. What Len does, Len plays a very important role in our industry because he helps us. He helps personal trainers and fitness instructors understand the research and understand how to apply it. So for those of you, if you're a general fitness consumer, if you're an enthusiast, and this is like, wow, this is amazing, I wish I knew more stuff about like this, the cool thing is this is what your trainers learn. This is what your instructors learn when they go to continuing education workshops. That's why if you are a consumer, one of the most important questions you can ask, whether you're going to work with a trainer or instructor, is, hey, what continuing education have you done and when was the last time you did it? Because good trainers, good instructors are always going to workshops or going to conventions like Idea World. They're reading articles from people like Dr. Kravitz because they're staying on top of the game. I mean, look, Len has done a tremendous amount of work and he knows this field so well, which is why he put out this book, Hit Your Limit. And what we talked about is absolutely true. HIIT is a great form of exercise, but like any form of exercise, it has a point of diminishing returns, meaning that the more of it you do doesn't necessarily provide additional benefits. HIIT is a very high intense. It's a lot of stress on your body. High intensity interval training is a lot of stress on your body. It works. But you have to understand the volume. You have to understand how to apply it. And that's exactly what Len's book, Hit Your Limit, does. So I can't recommend it enough. Check below in the show notes. If you want another great book about fitness, hey, I know it. Smarter Workouts is what I wrote. I have some stuff in there on HIIT and metabolic conditioning. If you bought Hit Your Limit and Smarter Workouts together, wow. That's basically all you need for your fitness library. And I'm not kidding about that. Between what Len did with Hit Your Limit and the information I have on strength training, mobility, and movement training is Smarter Workouts. If you're just an enthusiast and you're going, what do I need to do for my own workouts? Go no further than Hit Your Limit by Dr. Len Kravitz and Smarter Workouts, The Science of Exercise Made Simple by yours truly. I'll have links below to both in the show notes. And really, I mean it. You do not have to be an instructor to enjoy Idea World. Even if you just show up and go to the expo, you are going to get a lot out of that. So if you can make it, it would be great to see you there. It's going to be the end of June this year in Anaheim, and hopefully you can make it. And if you do, please make a point to introduce yourself. I love meeting listeners of All About Fitness. I really do. I'd love to meet you. Take a selfie, post it, because, as this thing grows, as we grow, I want to meet you if you're out there. So if you're going to be at Idea World, please look for me. I'm teaching a couple sessions there, and hopefully we can connect, and hopefully we can take that selfie. Thanks for stopping by, and I look forward to having you join me for future episodes of All About Fitness.